listening to SpursCast, episode 637. My name is Paul Garcia, and I'm your host here on SpursCast. I'll be going solo in this episode being recorded on a Saturday morning. In this episode, I'll look back at the Spurs' last four games, how the team is doing overall through 12 games, and Derek White's struggles on the offensive end. Let's jump right into this episode. All right, so it's been a while, I know, since I was able to last record a SpursCast. So let's go ahead and go through how the team has performed lately. So it's been four games since I last recorded. So the Spurs went 2-2, so 500 in their last four games. Let's go back to last Friday, so it's been a while here. So let's go back to Orlando. The Spurs are on the road. They pick up a win against the Magic by 13 points. The Spurs were favored in this game by 3.5, and this was a pretty comfortable win for the team. They built a lead of 16 points, and they held on to that lead. Then on Sunday, 2 days later, the Spurs, suffered a pretty bad loss here against the Oklahoma City Thunder. The game was on the road in Oklahoma City. The Spurs did lose by 5, a close game, but the reason why I say this is a bad loss is because, number one, San Antonio was favored by 3.5, but then number two, they had a 16-point lead on the Thunder at one point in this game. So again, they let go of another big lead. This happened just a few weeks ago against Dallas, where they lost a 20-point lead against the Mavs. And so the Spurs did lose this game, a close one, and they fell to 1-6 in crunch time. So, as John Diaz and I had recorded 9 days ago, the crunch time numbers haven't been good for this team, and we continue to see that struggle there in OKC with that loss. Then on Wednesday this past week, the Spurs did pick up a nice, comfortable win. They defeated the Sacramento Kings in San Antonio by 19 points, so it was their second biggest blowout win of the season behind that first opening night game against Orlando. The Spurs were favored by 1 in this game, but you know, this is a very comfortable win for the team. Like I said, they led by as many as 25 points, and so they just had their way against the Kings there in that game on Wednesday. And then Friday comes, and the Spurs, they drop to 0-3 against the Dallas Mavericks. Dallas comes to town against San Antonio. I know that they've played each other a lot lately, these two teams. And the Mavs, on paper, yes, it looks like a 14-point win for the Mavs, but it was really a blowout. We kind of saw that. And the Spurs did drop to 0-3 against Dallas. The Mavs were favored by 2.5 this season. I mean, by 2.5 in this game, should I say. And the Spurs trailed by 27, which is more than Indiana had led against San Antonio. And we know that Indiana was that one game where the Spurs really struggled. And they kind of just got blown out here by Dallas. And Dallas did a great job, taking advantage of the Spurs' lack of size with Jakob Poeltl out, with having Kristaps Porzingis back. They really fed Porzingis down low in the paint. He had 16 of his points there. And then on the defensive end, with Porzingis back, he provided a lot of length, and the Mavs basically dared the Spurs to shoot from three and from mid-range, and they took away the paint as much as they could, and so the Spurs really struggled to get baskets inside the paint. And you do see more so that loss of Poeltl, where even Coach Pop admitted it. Yes, like in games like against Dallas, it really shows when the Spurs are lacking that size. And then not only that, they're missing another big man in Jock Landale, who is also out due to health and safety protocols. So all they're relying on is Drew Eubanks and Thad Young there to man the five right now for this early stretch of the season with Poeltl out. And then one thing that the players did say, a lot of the players, yes, there was that size advantage for Dallas, but the players were saying more so, and specifically Devin Vassell said this, was that, basically the Spurs get too, they get too content after a win. So they were so they were on a high after defeating the Kings by 19 points. And then basically they said they didn't bring that energy and that focus and that lockdown mentality to the game against the Mavs. And basically Dallas took advantage of that and really just came out blazing and took the lead big time early on, and then they ended up holding on to that lead. So now the Spurs, basically it wasn't too bad of a four games. They should have been 3-1 if we go by their Vegas, options in terms of what Vegas projected them to be. And instead they went 2-2. So again, 2-2 is not too bad for the last four games. Overall, they are 4-8 on the season through 12 games. They're 13th out west, so they're basically right there within that playing game. They're just two spots away from that 9-10 seed area. And then, they're looking like a team who's going to be, not the worst in the West in terms of, we're looking at the lottery and stuff, because, Houston and New Orleans they're really struggling. They only have one win each as I record this again, on a Saturday morning. So they're going to be more so in that competitive area in the West of trying to get into that playing range so far from what we see through 12 games of the season. Some updates on the team. We do know that Jakob Poeltl is still out in the health and safety protocols. And Coach Pop did say before the Mavs game on Friday that there is a, he thinks it's a 50-50 chance Poeltl joins the Spurs on their upcoming road trip, which begins Sunday against the Lakers. And then, like I mentioned earlier, Jock Landale was also out. He's also in health and safety protocols. And then Kade Bates' job has kind of been on the questionable list. He hurt his back in one of the games earlier this week. And so he's missed two games in a row now with a lower back injury. But he's, like I said, he was questionable in each of those games. So it doesn't look like it's like a major injury for Kade Bates' job. So topic two, let's go ahead and discuss the Spurs now through 12 games, how they're doing. That loss against Dallas, while yes, it was a bad loss for San Antonio, it helped them in their numbers offensively. They moved up to 14th. They were kind of hovering around 17th, 19th for most of the week. So they're scoring 1.073 points per possession. Where are they top 10? Still all the areas that we've talked about here on the Spurscast through each week. Fast break scoring, they're 8th. Turnover percentage, they're now number 1 in taking care of the ball. Pace, they're 6th. Assist percentage, really good here. Second still, they're getting 30. They're getting a lot of games with 30 assists, and they're basically second to only the Warriors, which one of the best. Which are basically the best passing team in the NBA. So the Spurs are continuing to move the ball. Still a very concerning sign is that they're number one in attempts in the non-restricted area, which is at floater range. And like John and I discussed last week, that's not a good area to be number one in because that's a very, low accurate shot to have. Nobody shoots over 50% from that range. It's a tough thing to do for a team. And so basically teams are making you not get to the closest point of the rim, but you're kind of getting in that area where you don't want to be and where teams are glad for you to be taking shots there. But for now though, they are the number one team in accuracy from that floater range, from that non-restricted area. So they're shooting, I think it's like about 48% from when I last looked. They're number one in points in the paint scoring still, to hold that advantage. And that was something that Dallas did take away from them. They only scored 46 points in the paint against the Mavs. They normally average about 54. And so that's something that, again, teams are going to try to take away from San Antonio, is that they don't want them to score in the paint. They know that's their one big advantage. And if they can't score in the paint, well, then they struggle from the outside with their jumpers. In mid-range attempts, they're 6th still. 3-point accuracy, they made an improvement here the last few games. They're moved up to the top 10 at their 8th. But the problem is, while they're shooting the 3 well, they don't take any attempts, which I'll get to when I get to their bottom 10 analysis. And then wide-open 3-point percentage, they're actually, they've improved there as well. They're now 8th in accuracy from the wide-open 3. Now, where are they struggling on offense? Again, these are only the bottom 10 stats here. Free throw rate, like we've talked about, this is going to be an issue for the team probably the entire season, is that they don't get to the free throw line. 27th in free throw rate. 3-point attempts now, they've fallen back to 29th. So again, while they're making this progress of actually making the threes now, they're still not attempting a lot of them. And that's just something that they don't want to do. It's just something that, they really only rely on four players to be their heavy volume shooters. That's Lonnie Walker the fourth. That's Bryn Forbes, Doug McDermott, and then Devin Vassell. So aside from those four players, a lot of the other players on the team don't really want to shoot the three unless they have to. A lot of them want to attack and try to get inside or maybe get that mid-range jumper. And then wide open threes, again, they're just not generating wide open threes, so they're 27th there. So again, the 3-point accuracy is at least improved, but now the problem is they got to actually take the threes and try to keep up, because that's one of the biggest issues for this team. When we look at where they're winning and losing games, they're winning the 2-pointers, the paint and the mid-range by 82 points. But they're losing the 3-point line by 66 points. And then the free throw line's not too concerning. They're only losing it by 7 points, considering that they don't take that many free throws themselves. Let's go to defense. Now, the defense looked good for this week, but it kind of just depends on when you're listening to this episode or when I recorded, should I say. So, throughout the week, they were a top 10 defense. They were like 8th one night. They were 10th one day. But then this Dallas loss, when they let the Mavs score over 120 points, this really set them back defensively. So now it doesn't look too good. Basically, they look like a league average defense, according to these numbers, as I record this on Saturday morning. They're now 15th on defense, allowing 1.066 points per possession. Where are they top 10? A lot of the same areas that we've discussed. Here on the Spurscast, they're really good at not putting their opponent on the free throw line. They're 3rd in opponent free throw rate. They're good about not letting teams get in transition, so they're 7th there in opponent fast break points. They're good at turning teams over, making them forcing turnovers. They're 10th in opponent turnover percentage, but that used to be 5th again because Dallas really took care of the ball and the Spurs just didn't bring that aggressiveness, that tenacity, that active defense that they've shown all year. And even Coach Pop mentioned that he was disappointed that the team only had, like, I think he said, one forced turnover in the first half. And so that was something where the Dallas, this number could have been better 10th. Instead, it was like 5th earlier in the week. Steals, they dropped down to 9th again because they weren't able to get that many steals. They had a season low 3 steals against Dallas. But overall, they're a good team enforcing steals. Or creating steals, should I say. They're 9th in blocks, so again, a very active team. And then points off turnovers, they're 9th still, so they're a top 10 there. And then opponent restricted area accuracy, 9th. So this one's interesting. So last year they were actually really good in terms of opponent accuracy there in the restricted area, which is the closest area to the rim. But, you know, even though, yes, they were a top 10 team there, it's tough because that's the closest area to the basket. That's the most efficient area you can be on the court. And so if you're still letting teams get in that area, they're going to have good nights against you. And I think that's kind of where we see why the Spurs have a pretty bad opponent effective field goal percentage. Because even though, yes, they're taking away some of the threes and some of the other shots, the fact that opponents are getting such an efficient shot there at the rim is tough for the San Antonio defense. And obviously it doesn't help with the Pirtle being out. Now let's look at where they're struggling on defense. Their bottom 10 areas, opponent restricted areas, attempts at the rim. So that, again, this is what I mentioned. Teams are still getting to close to the rim and getting a lot of shots there. The Spurs are 27th in terms of trying to limit teams. And this is even happening with Pirtle. So this isn't something that it's probably just more so a product of the Spurs playing small lineups. They're always having, you know, a lot of more wing players, four guards and wings, and then one main big man. So because of that change in philosophy, they're going to continue to get attacked there closest to the rim. I think even when Pirtle gets back, obviously Pirtle will be better in terms of deflecting and helping to stop a lot of that penetration inside the lane. They're not so you can see this is also evident how teams are getting closer to the rim because of when we look at the Spurs. I mean, how many of their opponents' shots are coming from that floater range, that very inefficient range. They're not forcing a lot of shots there. They're 21st in terms of forcing shots there. They're 29th in accuracy from the floater range for opponents. So opponents are, when they do take those bad shots, those non-restricted area shots, they're making those very well. Teams are scoring just so, you know, while the Spurs are scoring in the paint, they're number one, they're 28th in terms of letting teams score in the paint. So basically they're not making a huge advantage there. Yes, they're scoring a lot, but then their opponents are also scoring a lot in the paint. So they're it's kind of like almost canceling itself out when we talk about the points in the paint battle. And then, opponent mid-range attempts, very similar story here where the Spurs just, teams are basically getting to the 3-point line or into the closest area to the rim because again, the Spurs aren't forcing them to stop back and take bad shots, which are the mid-range shots. They're 26th in terms of making teams take mid-range attempts. And then when teams do take the mid-rangers, and that's not a lot, but when they do, they're actually making them pretty well. They're at Spurs at 27th in mid-range accuracy. So again, those are the areas where they're top 10 on offense and top 10 on defense. And obviously, like I said, some of the stuff, a lot of these numbers did get changed because of that bad loss to Dallas where they lost by 14, and that really impacted their defensive numbers. The NHL season is underway, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, has an unbelievable offer to celebrate the greatest sport on ice. New customers can bet just $1 on any NHL game and win $100 in free bets if either team scores a goal. Doesn't matter if it's a one-time clapper or a deft deflection. However they light the lamp, you win. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, DraftKings won't leave you empty-handed. Everyone can play the huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contest. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in top prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code TBPN. Throw down $1 on any NHL game and win $100 in free bets if either team scores a goal. This week, one puck in the net nets you a big win with promo code TBPN at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Our last topic of this episode, I do want to talk about one player in particular, and this is a player who I've seen mentioned on Twitter, and then I even got this question on Twitter if I could discuss this topic. This is Derek White. What's up with Derek White? Obviously, he's the one player who kind of sticks out in terms of struggling, especially mostly on the offensive end, where we kind of see where he's really struggling. So let's kind of look at Derek White. First overall, and then also specifically these last few games where he's been struggling. So overall for the season, he's averaging 10.8 points per game on 10.3 shots. He's taking 4.5 3-point attempts each game. He's shooting 32% from the 3-point line, so we do know that he is struggling with his outside shot. He doesn't get to the line that much, so just 2.1 free throw attempts. So that's basically one time a game he gets to the line. He's doing pretty well in assists, 5.6 assists, which is second, I think, to only Murray on the team. And then 1.6 turnovers in 30.9 minutes. And he does play the he has played the second most minutes behind DeJounte Murray. So again, while he is struggling, and we see that, Coach Pop still has confidence because he's keeping him out there on the floor. He wants him out on the floor at all times, basically, alongside Murray. And now let's go to his individual games in these last three games where he's really struggling. In the last three games, first let's go back to OKC. He had 0 points on that night. He went 0 of 10 on the road against OKC. Then when the Spurs got a good win against Sacramento, he really struggled there still. He only had 2 points against the Kings. And then in this last loss against Dallas, he didn't take that many shots, but he scored 5 points against Dallas. So again, he hasn't been in double figures in a while now. And we combine all of his last three games, he's now shooting 3 of 21 from the floor in those last three games. So let's talk about where do his shots come from and maybe what needs to kind of change for him, and where does he need to be a little bit more aggressive, and where does he need to maybe step back on a few of these different shots. So we do know that most of White's shots come from the three-point line. 44% of his shots come from three. From there, it's 25% of his shots come in the restricted area, which is the closest area to the rim. And he's shooting well there. He's actually making 65% of his shots at the rim. So you know, he gets 25% of his shots come there from that area, but he's shooting well from that area. Here's a very big problem for him. 24% of his shots are coming from the floater range, which is, again, that non-restricted area in the paint that's not the closest area to the basket. And he's only shooting 27% from there. So, again, that's an area I think that maybe he needs to look at taking out of his shooting arsenal a little bit, is trying to either attack directly at the rim and trying to get as close as he can, because he's shooting well there. The numbers say, you know, keep taking your shots closer to the rim, but not, you know, not maybe passing or else doing something with the ball, because when he's taking those non-restricted area floaters, that's where he's really struggling right now. 27% accuracy, and not just him, but a lot of players struggle from that area. That's just not a good efficient shot to be taking those floater range type of shots. And then he's not shooting well in the mid-range. He's shooting 22% from mid-range, but he doesn't take that many mid-range attempts. He only takes 7% of his shots from the mid-range. So, again, that's not too concerning, because he's not a player who relies on the mid-range. There is some hope, though, for his shot to eventually bounce back. And where do we see this? We see this in the wide-open threes data. So while he has been struggling, he's actually still shooting 46% on wide-open threes for the season. So again, you know, there's some hope there that once you know, he'll eventually his shot will kind of go back to the norm for him. And right now he isn't a shooting slump from outside specifically. But one thing we do see, though, is that teams aren't letting him get wide open three. So yes, he's shooting well from there, 46% for the year, but only 52% of his attempts have been wide open three. So teams are really trying to take away that wide open three for him. Whereas we look at someone like Keldon Johnson, 70% of his shots come from the wide open three, whereas Derek, it's only 52%. So teams really make a choice of leaving Keldon open, but really staying closer to Derek and not letting him get open. And then just some more data that kind of shows why he's how he's struggling. When we look at points per possession, how many points per possession does a player score? He's scoring 0.162 points per possession, which compared to his teammates is second to last only to Kade Bates-Jopp. So this is basically saying while he's on the floor, he's just basically not adding a lot to the offense and especially to the scoring column. How's he doing on his drives? Because we know that he's one of the top. He's actually second on the team in drives behind only DeJounte Murray. He and Keldon are actually tied, Derek and Keldon. And so when he drives the ball against the defense, 47% of the time he is passing the ball out. 38% of the time he takes a shot, and only 5.6% of the time is him getting to the line. So basically, those are his two options right now: is either pass first and then take a shot second, because he's just not getting to the line, which is weird, because he used to get, you know, he used to be pretty decent at getting to the line back when he was healthy in his last few seasons here, but that's just not been the case right now. And then some more stuff that just shows that, you know, he's really struggling right now. Using Profit X's model, what they do is they basically look at a player currently and then they kind of project where he's going to be in the future. So right now, yes, while he's struggling on offense, Profit X does still see Derek playing as a starter. The kind of production he's bringing to the Spurs is that of a starter for now. But he is underperforming his contract according to their analysis. He does make $15.6 million this season, but they say that he's playing like a player earning $11.5 million. So again, that's according to Profit X. They do see that struggle there from Derek White. So again, that's something interesting to watch. And I do want to note for Profit X, Profit X is a dynamic financial and performance index powered by artificial intelligence with front office optics displaying 17 visual and time series models for 480 plus NBA athletes. The Athletex models historical dynamic and future performance data to monitor and project insights on contracts, performance, injuries, team fit, development, and potential. You can follow them on Twitter @ProfitXAI and also on Instagram. Instagram. So again, that's something that and the reason why I bring up that profit X numbers is because, you know, when I looked at pretty much all the players who are getting you know, minutes for San Antonio, the core players here, and you know, a lot of them are you know, overperforming their contracts. A lot of the players on the team right now. So that's why when you see Derek's probably one of the only players who is underperforming his contract here at the moment. And then you know, what does cleaning the glass say? Cleaning the glass says that the Spurs are scoring minus 13.8 points per 100 with him on the floor. So even the numbers show there. And you know, that's a pretty big drop off when we look at the other starters in the lineup. You know, the team is a positive when DeJounte's on the floor. They're a minus six with Keldon. They're a positive with Doug McDermott. They're a positive with Poeltl, and then they're barely a minus with Eubanks. So we do see out of the starters, aside from Keldon Johnson, Derek's the other one, the other player on offense who the team really struggles when he's out on the floor right now. Now, the reason why I think Coach Pop hasn't made a lineup change with Derek is while he goes through these struggles on offense is because of his defense. I mean, this is the reason why I just don't think that as long as they're kind of showing to be a top 10 to, you know, league average defense, Pop doesn't want to change that. And he likes having Derek out there. And so we see this in a lot of the different metrics and data. The Spurs are giving up plus 1.9 points per 100 with Derek on the floor, which, yes, that sounds bad because it's a positive, but actually that's the second best number in terms of starters behind only DeJounte. So all the starters giving up more points when they're on the floor on defense, but Derek's the second lowest number compared to just DeJounte. So again, he's showing basically to be one of the better starters out there on defense. We see that when compared to his teammates, he really pops out in different areas, like on defensive field goal percentage. He's one of the better players on the team in that area. Contested shots, he basically contests shots at the rate of like a big compared to for being a guard. And then also blocks, you know, among his teammates, he's one of the top players there. And then, you know, he doesn't have any weaknesses in terms of looking at different elements of data on the team compared to his teammates. He's kind of like average in different areas. So deflections, he's kind of average there with his teammates. Steals, fouls, defensive rebounds. There's no metric specifically that kind of shows that he's like a negative compared to his teammates when we just look at those specific Spurs players. And then, you know, the question that I got on Twitter was, you know, should he go to the bench and you know, what should happen if Pop should do that? So for now, I don't think Pop would do that because, you know, for now, I think that, again, like I think the defense is his defense is keeping him on the floor right now, keeping him in the starting lineup. I think Pop likes having a very switchable 1-2 rotation in terms of, you know, Derek picks up somebody, and then if not, DeJounte picks up that player if a screen comes by. And so I just think Pop likes having that flexibility. And like I said, the numbers show that he should still stay on the floor for his defense. And then also maybe Pop wants to see a larger sample size, because when we look back, this group of you know, of Derek in the starting lineup along with everyone else and Jakob Poeltl when he was healthy, they all you know, were showing they only got seven games together. It was a very small sample size before Poeltl had to go out with his health and safety protocols. And so with Jakob on the floor, according to Cleaning the Glass and this whole starting five, they were a plus 0.1 points per 100. Now it is obviously showing that they're struggling with Drew Eubanks as a center. They're a minus 9.9 points per 100. But again, Poeltl's eventually going to come back. We just don't know when. So I do wonder if Pop doesn't want to change anyone out of the starting lineup until he sees more data, maybe 15, 20 games of sample size with Poeltl and that whole starting group. If he wants to see what they look like, and if they're still struggling and they start showing some minuses, well then maybe he starts looking at making a lineup change. Now, if Pop were to make a starting lineup change with Derek, taking him out of the starting lineup, you know, who would probably be the most logical choice? I think that would probably be Devin Vassell. And so what do we see with Devin so far? According to Cleaning the Glass, when you just plug in DeJounte Murray, Keldon Johnson, Devin Vassell, and Doug McDermott, the Spurs, it's a small sample size. The Spurs have only played 36 possessions with those four players, but the numbers show a very good lineup here. There are plus 18.4 points per 100 with those four players on the floor. Now, something to note is that, you know, it's really all data with Thaddeus Young. When those four players play alongside Thad Young at the five, that's where a lot of those numbers, the positives come out. They don't look so good. They're a minus when it's Drew Eubanks at the center with those four players. And then one thing we do note is that none of these players these four players have not played with Poeltl in any lineup so far this season, according to Cleaning the Glass. So again, I think that if Pop were to pull Derek from the starting lineup, it would probably be Devin Vassell who gets inserted into there. And so so what would that mean? So some of the impacts on the offensive end, this would put a lot more pressure on DeJounte Murray and Keldon Johnson, because like I said, they're the two top aside from Derek, DeJounte, and Kelton are the top three players in drives so far to start the year. And so that would basically take out one of your top three drivers of moving the ball and getting into the teeth of the defense. And so that would be a lot of pressure on Murray and Kelton. I think Murray can handle it, but Kelton, that would be even more pressure on him, considering that he mainly, when we look at his data, he mainly only shoots the ball whenever he goes into the lane. He doesn't really pass as much as Derek can or DeJounte can. So that's one concerning part. But obviously we know that, you know, Devin would bring the team a more accurate shooter from the outside. But his playmaking too has kind of increased a little bit, but again, he's not driving to the level that Derek, DeJounte, and Kelton do, or even somebody like Alani Walker does. And then as far as defensively, you know, their numbers are very close. When we look at it, like I said earlier, defensive field goal percentage, contested shots, blocks, deflection, steals, all those kind of numbers, Devin's numbers aren't too far off Derek's. And the only areas that where Derek is like really, outshines Devin is in the fouls, that he doesn't foul as much as Devin does. And then the contested shots, Devin's like, I think at 6 contested shots per 36 minutes. But maybe that could also just because of the increase in minutes. Maybe if Devin starts getting more minutes, maybe he can get his contested shot rate up even higher. So again, it's something to watch. My opinion right now is that I don't think Pop will make any changes until he sees more sample size with Pirtle back. So I think we'll have to wait. And again, like I said, yes, Derek's struggling, but they're still 2-2 in these last four games. It's not like, you know, and they could have basically gone 3-1 had they held that OKC game. So while he's even struggling, they're still getting wins. So obviously that Mavs game doesn't look good, but they're not too far off. And so who knows, maybe he does make a change. For now, my opinion is though that he will keep Derek in the starting lineup, and kind of they're going to try to see if Derek can kind of get through these struggles on offense, because like I said, pretty much all of these struggles are coming on the offensive end. I do want to see if White becomes more aggressive in attacking the rim, and then if the team can maybe get him some more wide open 3-point shots. But if he continues to take those floaters, that's going to be a problem for him, because that's just a shot that's not there, and it's just not a good shot that any player should be taking. So again, we'll kind of see what happens with Derek and the starting lineup and whether or not the team makes some changes there. Don't forget to visit ProjectSpurs.com. We have Stephen Michael providing his analysis after every game with his Going for 3 series. Michael DeLeon is now doing a weekly show called the Spurs Open Mic, so you can check that out. He posted on Project Spurs as well. Rocky Garza Jr. is getting ready for every week by previewing the upcoming games early on in the week. That's Rocky Garza Jr.'s written piece. And then Benjamin Bornstein, of course, is getting ready for the draft later on after the season ends with his latest analysis called Smells Like Prospect Spirit for College Teams with Supreme Draft Talent. Thanks to Michael DeLeon for mixing and producing this episode. From all of us at Project Spurs, stay safe and have a great day.